It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? It's a neighborly day in this beauty wood, a neighborly day for a beauty. Would you be mine?
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is our spring membership drive. More about that in a minute. Today, we celebrate Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers, the man that started a television program for small people 50 years ago from 1968 to 2000. And over the course of those decades, Rogers and his team made the show into a staple. He spoke softly, using simple words to communicate the big ideas by which we should live, how to treat others, how to like ourselves, how to be happy, and how to let yourself be sad when those times come. Joining us by phone is project director at the Fred Rogers Company, also producer of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood from 1983 to 2001, Margie Whitmer. Great. Welcome to the show, Margie.
To their engineer and CC.
Welcome to the show, Margie Whitmer.
Okay.
Good. Okay. Well, we'll turn right now to professor of religious studies at Elizabethtown College and author of the 2015 book, Peaceful Neighbor, Discovering the Countercultural Mr. Rogers, Michael Long. Welcome back, Michael.
Hi, Ann. It's great to be back in your neighborhood today.
Thank you for joining us again. Margie Whitmer, are you there now?
Yes, I am.
Oh,
good morning.
Hi. Thank you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Margie, Fred Rogers had such a calm and gentle presence on television. What was he really like to work with behind the scenes?
Wait, that's a question we get a lot.
I bet. And,
excuse me. He actually was the same person on and off the screen. I mean, he was gentle. He was kind. He was soft-spoken. And he really was very thorough and caring in everything that he did, really. I mean, yes, he got angry. That's another question we always get. But his anger was modulated, and it was thoughtfully exhibited when he expressed his angry feelings.
He's getting a lot of attention on the 50th anniversary of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. There's a new documentary film set to be released in June, and Tom Hanks will play Fred in a major motion picture. What kind of advice would you give Tom Hanks in playing a role like that?
Oh, boy, that's a tough question. I guess just to be as honest as you can be, because that's how Fred was. And I think that my guess is that he will watch some of the programs to get the gestures, et cetera. And so I think that just being honest, trying to be as honest as he can be, because that's basically who Fred was.
He, to the naked eye, appeared to do the same thing over and over and over again every day. How did he feel about that? The walking in the door, saying the same sort of thing, putting on his cardigan, that kind of a thing. What was it about that that was important so much so that he repeated it for so many years?
Well, for very young children, routine is important. So the idea of him coming in and taking off his work clothing and putting on a sweater and sneakers, something to relax with, that it signaled to the kids at home watching, I'm going to be with you for a while. This is our time together. And so that was important to him. I mean, there were days where he really didn't want to do it, but, he knew that the audience, the kids were the most important element. And so he knew how important it was, and that's why it never really changed.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and this is our spring membership drive, and you know that listener support is the foundation of our budget. Please make your gift of support right now at WOSU.org or by calling 866-897-9678. We're spending the hour talking about Fred Rogers, the children's television icon. We'll talk about his life, his influence, his legacy, and the perfect way to support public broadcasting right now is with a Mr. Rogers thank you gift. Make a donation of $7 a month as a sustainer or a one-time gift of $84 and get the Mr. Rogers color-changing sweater mug. Or for a gift of $150, that's $12.50 a month as a sustainer, you can get two mugs. Keep one for yourself and give one to a neighbor. Go online to WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. That's 866-897-9678. Michael Long, in your book about Fred Rogers, You write about his religious faith and his background. He was an ordained minister, but we don't hear references to God or religion on the show actually at all, right? How did his faith influence his television work?
Well, we do hear occasional references here and there. For example, in 1983, he held up a biblical verse about peace. And he also talked about God creating the world on the show as well. But you're right, very rarely did he mention God and faith, but it was his faith, that is, the fuel that really drove him to do this television program. And it was his faith, really, that drove the content of the show as well. So, for example, his focus on peace and justice all came out of his faith in Jesus as the Prince of Peace. It's really his Christian faith that drove the show.
Is it fair to call him a radical pacifist? How do you summarize him in a term?
Oh, I think he was a radical pacifist. If we look at his shows in context, we can see during the Vietnam War that he opposes the war. If we look at his show in context, we can see during the nuclear arms race that he opposes the nuclear arms race. If we look at his show during the Persian Gulf War, we can see that he opposes the Persian Gulf War. He developed these programs out of the context in which he was writing. And so he's developing these programs of peacemaking in response to the wider context in which violence is just raging.
And how did Hawks respond to that?
They didn't like it. Some of them wrote letters telling him to stay out of politics.
Uh-huh.
So the Hawks didn't like it. But, you know, the peacemakers did, and they wrote letters of appreciation to him. May I say something else?
Absolutely.
You know, Mr. Rogers, I was thinking about your comment about Tom Hanks. Fred Rogers was not interested in going to see Tom Hanks' movie Saving Private Ryan.
Really?
Yes, he wasn't. He wasn't attracted to the violence of the movie. He wasn't attracted to the content of the movie either. In fact, he said that when he thought about it, when he thought about World War II, he thought about sitting around the radio with his parents and listening to the reports of the war. And he said when he was a little boy, he cried when he heard about the release of the prisoners in World War II. And so that's the memory that really stuck with him, and he wanted to hold on to that memory. So he refused to go see Saving Private Ryan. And maybe that's something that Mr. Hanks could check out, those comments that Mr. Rogers made about the movie.
Margie Whitmer, so he lived in his own private life a lot, if not all of these principles he tried to share on the show.
Yeah, he really did in his own modulated way. I mean, he was a vegetarian. He was quite religious. He read the Bible every morning. He prayed. He meditated. And he tried to really think about other people, walk in their shoes, and try and figure out where they were coming from when they were sad or angry or troubled. You know, that he really wanted everybody to know that they were lovable and able to love. And, you know, the basis of the program is to help young children develop healthy self-esteem so that they grow into productive, loving adults.
Is there any sense, or do you know, Margie, how the show influenced the adults in the children's lives at the time?
I guess I would say that we got lots of fan mail from all adults of all ages, even senior citizens, so that they a lot of times they would pick up on something that maybe was a real part of their life and write to Fred. You know, I was abused as a child. I never felt like anybody cared about me. But when I watched you, I knew there was somebody out there. You gave me some hope that, you know, the really strong letters like that often came through our doorway.
Margie, may I follow up on that? So when Fred Rogers was a little boy, he was usually driven to school by his chauffeur. And one day, George Allen wasn't able to take him to school, and he had to walk home. And at this point, Fred Rogers described himself as fat and shy. And so as he's walking home, these boys start to chase him, and they start to call him Fat Freddy. And Fred Rogers is just frightened to death, and he eventually takes shelter in the home of a nearby widow, a neighbor. And when he got to the house, he said he really resented those children for not seeing him in his essence. He resented their not being able to see beyond his fatness, beyond his shyness. And at that point, I think that memory stuck with him, and it stuck with him the rest of his life. And his program, my sense is that his program really comes out of that experience. He wanted children to know deep down that what mattered to them was inside, not how they looked, not what they had on, not what kind of house they lived in, but who they were inside. He often said, he often put it this way, I like you just the way you are, right? It didn't matter what they had. It mattered who they were. And who they were, as Margie said, was somebody who was eminently lovable.
He was from a wealthy family. He had a chauffeur.
Right. Yeah, he was from a wealthy family, indeed.
And yet very sensitive to the wants and needs and the internal struggles of others.
That's right. And I think that comes from his upbringing, but also his, we talked about his struggles with his weight when he was younger, but it was also just about his drive to be perfect and understand that you can't be perfect, and that he really just was very sensitive to everybody around him.
I want to thank Donald Van Loon and Ashley for your pledge of support today. We're talking about the 50th anniversary of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. It's a great conversation with Margie Whitmer, project director at Fred Rogers Company. She's also producer of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood from 1983 to 2001. Also with us, Michael Long. He's a professor of religious studies at Elizabethtown College and author of the 2015 book, Peaceful Neighbor, Discovering the Counterculture Mr. Rogers. This is a great time to talk about this 50 years hence, since the program began. And I know you're out there listening and enjoying hearing these insights about Fred Rogers. Figure out how that translates into showing your support for 89.7 NPR News. This is listener-supported 89.7 NPR News, and you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Last month, WOSU Public Media and PBS celebrated 50 years of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood on TV, and we want to extend that celebration today with a great thank-you gift. It's the Mr. Rogers color-changing sweater mug. Make a gift of $7 a month as a sustainer and get this 14-ounce mug. When you add hot water or coffee or any warm fluid, I guess, Mr. Rogers' suit jacket changes into his iconic cardigan. Get one mug for a one-time gift of $84 or get two mugs for a gift of $150. You can keep one for yourself and give one to your favorite neighbor. That's two mugs for $150 or $12.50 a month as a sustainer. Go online to WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. This is a special occasion to celebrate the 50th anniversary. We don't know how long these will be around, so get yours today, 866-897-9678. In this interview, it's a 1994 interview on the Charlie Rose Show, Fred Rogers was asked what his show accomplishes.
If adults can show what they love in front of kids, there'll be some child who'll say, I'd like to be like that. Or I'd like to do that. I remember Yo-Yo Ma being on our program. He's come to visit several times. Yeah. And there have been families who have written to us to say that their kids want to learn the cello.
Right, because they saw Yo-Yo Ma on the program?
Because they saw him love his work on the program.
That was a big part of the program for me. Margie Whitmer,
yes,
is seeing people coming on and talking about their jobs as adults. That fascinated Fred Rogers as well.
Yeah, it did. And he used to talk about this Quaker saying, attitudes are caught, not taught. And so he loved having people on to demonstrate that, people who love doing what they do. And I was there when Yo-Yo Ma, the first time he was on the program, and I remember that after Fred left Negri's Music Shop and he walks through the door into his house, you know, it had been weeks since we had done the piece, but I could tell, just because I know him so well, the joy that he had in that visit with Yo-Yo Ma, not only because he respected him so much as a musician, but that he's just a really wonderful, good person. And I remember that's one of my favorite moments from the show.
Is seeing him walk through the door.
Right. And if you model options for people, positive options, then it gives them that hope that, wow, I can grow up and be something. You know, maybe I will be a famous cellist, or maybe I will learn how to throw a pot or be a good police officer, or, you know, that it gives you options, that there's not only one way to be in life.
How did you decide who would be on the show as adults showing what they do for a living?
Well, sometimes it was people writing to us. Mm-hmm. Other times it was, you know, we did theme week, so sometimes there was people that would fit into the theme. Now with Yo-Yo Ma, and also with a person, a biologist, a marine biologist, Sylvia Earle, Fred had read articles about them in The New Yorker, and so I called them up and got them on the show.
In fact, but, I mean, he was on, Yo-Yo Ma was on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood before he became the sensation he became.
Right. I mean, he was just coming up. And I remember I was late getting to work, and I was walking in kind of casually, and somebody said, Yo-Yo Ma's on hold for you. And I was thinking, what? He called me back himself? I thought he had this big staff of, you know, people.
Was there a big staff of people working on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood?
Not really. I mean, when it was going and in production, yes, we had, you know, we hired props people and costume people and artists, and we did, when we did location pieces, we did freelance stuff, but the company really only had about 12 or 15 people total, you know, year round. So it wasn't a lot, there weren't a lot of us there.
Music in general was a big part of the show. Fred was a musician and composer himself. How did that fit with his other messages, Michael Long?
Oh, one of my favorite scenes in Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood is when Fred sits down at the piano and he starts banging out on the tunes, and he looks angry. There's a wonderful photograph of him looking angry and playing the piano. And he turned to piano in that particular moment to teach children that it was okay to be angry, but it wasn't okay to hurt other people or to hurt oneself. And so the need was to, as Mr. Rogers thought, was to channel those feelings of anger into constructive activities. And for him, constructive activities usually meant playing music.
It's such a different approach than what I got, which was stop crying before I give you something to cry about. Right, Margie?
Right. You heard me.
wipe that frown off your face. Well, you know, he validated that in children, which was unusual for the time, wasn't it, Margie?
Yeah, it was. And I think people who walked by the television when it was on thought that Fred was trying to teach children to be good and obedient. And yes, he was trying to give them some values, but he talked about divorce. He talked about death. He talked about angry feelings a lot. So that there's a lot of depth to the programs that if you, as an adult, you sat down and watched it and analyzed it, you would see how much care and depth there was to the program.
And Michael Long, I think you and I have talked before about this. It was almost, the word sounds pejorative, but almost subversive, right?
Well, I think so. And I think most people focus on the psychological impact that Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood had. But I focus on the political effects of the program, too. And I think that through the neighborhood of make-believe, Fred Rogers really sought to subvert the values that we saw in wider culture. And so, for example, he uses his puppet Lady Elaine to question gender roles in the wider society. He uses African Americans to question the way African Americans were treated in wider society. He uses peace balloons to question the use of war. So he's constantly building this community that is almost a countercultural community to what we experience in wider political society. He also does it in terms of the environment. He creates a place in the neighborhood of make-believe that is free of litter. He also creates this place where people help hungry people plant food for themselves so that they can no longer be hungry. It's just this beautiful community in the midst of chaos. That's what the neighborhood of make-believe is for me.
I'd just like to comment in that, only saying that when you use that word subversive, it seems so strong to me. And yet, to me, it was just that's who Fred was. It was not planned. I mean, it was like, let's do a show about garbage or the environment. You know, that it was just so intuitive, part of who he was, to just approach life that way.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. No, and I know the word subversive doesn't feel right to me.
Yeah.
I think
it's perfect, Anne.
Okay.
I really do. I think the neighborhood of make-believe is a counterpolis. It's a political society. It's a psychological society. It's a social place that is absolutely contrary to the violence and chaos and economic injustice that's in the wider world. It really is. So I know it's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable because of how Fred looks, I think. He doesn't look subversive. He's wearing a red sweater, for goodness sake.
He's not marching in the streets, right?
No, and he talks softly. And he looks like the embodiment of peace.
If you look
at that program in context, I really do believe it's subversive.
I think that's the word, context, in terms of little by little, you know, his message and philosophy got out. And so I think when I think of subversive, I think of something much more loud and intense.
Yeah.
And so I don't have a problem with that part, I don't have a huge problem with it. It's not a term that I think of when I think of Fred Rogers. That's all.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And I'm wondering, are you ready to make today a snappy new day, as Mr. Rogers would say? Well, your day can only get brighter from here on when you give during our membership drive and get a great thank you gift. It's the Mr. Rogers color changing sweater mug. Now, you know, mugs are a thing with public media where they've kind of gone out of fashion, but this mug is special. It's the Mr. Rogers color-changing sweater mug. This mug is 14 ounces. It has images from the neighborhood of make-believe. It also has quotes and song lyrics on it. And when you add a hot beverage, Mr. Rogers' suit jacket changes into a cardigan. It's like magic. Get this mug and support public broadcasting. I really want one of these mugs. Get one mug for a one-time gift of $84 or get two mugs for $150. Go to WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. Those thank you gift levels, again, are $7 a month as a sustainer for one mug or get two mugs for $12.50 as a sustainer. That's WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. I want to be able to say thanks to a lot more people before the hour's up. So make the phone call right now. It only takes a few minutes, or go online to WOSU.org. This is a great opportunity to get a tchotchke that has a lot of meaning for a lot of people. 866-897-9678. And it's a great way to show your support for All Sides with Ann Fisher, for 89.7 NPR News, and all the programming you listen to and depend on every single day. This is a show that I would have on no matter what. I've had Michael Long on before to talk about Mr. Rogers when Michael wrote his book, Peaceful Neighbor, back in 2015. This isn't an unusual thing. This is typical fare. Tell us that this is something that you care about, that you enjoy, that has meaning for you and matters in your life, has value. 866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. I want to turn to Fred now in Columbus. No relation, but Fred, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi there. Well, so here's my basic question. Whatever happened to the fancy song? Do you need me to tell you what the fancy song was?
Yes.
And it disappeared, I think. And I'm wondering if there was some controversy, or was he just ahead of his time and realized that transgender issues were something he was not aware of at the time when he composed this song, but it would be very controversial now.
What was it? What was Margie Whitmer? Do you remember the fancy song?
Yeah, girls are fancy on the boys are fancy on the outside, girls are fancy on the inside. That's part of the song, and okay. It was, I think, and this is my take on this. I don't know the real answer to it, but kids are interested in their body parts. They're interested in what's different and what's alike, and that was the true reason he wrote the song. You know, that always he was thinking about what was age appropriate and what was important to the audience. So that's my take on it. I don't know the true, origin of it.
Michael Long?
Yeah, I think Margie's right. I would just simply add that as I interpret the song, it's a way of helping children feel comfortable about their sexuality. And it was one of the rare times, I think, that Fred Rogers addressed issues of sexuality on the program.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess.
And it was a very subtle way, wasn't it? Boys are fancy on the outside. Girls are fancy on the inside.
Yeah, it took me actually.
You don't get much more time.
Yeah.
I think that for the audience, I don't know. I'm not a child development expert, but I don't know if it's comfort with their sexuality. I think it's more about curiosity that at that point in their lives, I don't know if it's an issue about being comfortable being a boy or a girl, but yeah.
Well, I do think that if you feel as if you're fancy on the outside, that does help you feel comfortable with how you are on the outside. But yeah, we can agree to disagree.
Yeah. Fred in Columbus, thanks a lot for your call. I appreciate it. If you have a question or comment for our guests, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You mentioned that he wrote that song. Margie Whitmer, how much did he compose that was produced for the show?
He wrote all of the music.
Okay. Wow.
And every once in a while, we would do an opera, and it was the full half hour, most of the half hour of the program. And so he wrote the music and the lyrics for the operas as well.
Thanks to Ruth Rehack from Columbus for your pledge of support today. Everybody else out there, the number is 866-897-9678, or go online to WOSU.org. We're waiting for your show of support right now, 866-897-9678. Tell us that this is stuff you care about. In the recent television tribute to Fred Rogers that aired on WOSU-TV and PBS stations across the country, Whoopi Goldberg made the case that Mr. Rogers played his part in the civil rights movement when he cast an African-American man as a police officer on the show. Let's listen.
One of the most unforgettable moments in the neighborhood was the day Mr. Rogers asked Officer Clemens to cool his tired feet in a wading pool in the front yard of his house.
That feels great.
They soaked their feet together, and Mr. Rogers helped dry the policeman's feet when he was finished.
Can I help you here?
Thank you.
The meaning was unmistakable.
Michael Long, what was the significance of this scene from you know, where you sit?
Oh, the scene is beautiful. I'll just back up a little bit. In April 1968, Dr. King was assassinated. And several months later, Fred decides that he's going to bring Francois Clemens onto the program as the first black police officer in the neighborhood of make-believe. August 1968, Francois Clemens makes this debut on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. He's a police officer, and Francois questioned that initially because he had grown up in neighborhoods where police officers weren't especially friendly types, as he put it. But Fred insisted from what Francois says, and so Francois became this police officer who, by the way, never carried a gun. He usually just sang and was nice to people.
Right.
But so what Fred Rogers is doing there is he's showing the rest of us who are flooded with images of African-Americans rioting at this point in history, that there's a different way to look at African-Americans. They can keep our neighborhood safe. That's one role that they can play as well. I mean, it's a very striking image in August 1968. In that particular pool episode, Rogers shows that he's a thoroughgoing integrationist. He really does. I mean, there were weighed-ins that were part of the civil rights movement where people of different colors waded in to Waters to show that their commitment to integration. And that's exactly what Fred did in that episode.
It was probably one of the most Jesus-like things I saw that was, you know, from anyone who grew up, you know, Christian and with the teachings of Jesus, it was really profound.
Yeah, and you know, there's something really vulnerable about exposing one's feet too. But yeah, there's Jesus in the New Testament, right, washing the feet of his disciples, and Fred Rogers is sort of washing Francois's feet. It's a way of serving those you love, and here's a white man serving a black man. Incredibly striking.
Yeah. Margie Whitmer, are there other examples like that of Fred Rogers really putting it out there? I mean, going a distance on an issue.
Oh, boy. I guess one that comes up often in a lot of the shows is being able to control your feelings and manage your feelings and guide your anger and telling kids again and again and again that it's okay to be angry, but it's not okay to hurt people. That to me, that's one of the core issues that we seem to attack all the time in terms of also just modeling civility and modeling manners. You know, Fred always opens the door for people, pulls out chairs for people, calls somebody who's 30 years younger than he is Mr. or Mrs. Or, you know, that you know, when I was growing up, the kid called the adult Mr. and Mrs. And then finally when you were an adult, you could then call them by their first name. You know, that he's always pushing kindness and gentleness and talking out your feelings as opposed to, hitting somebody or not being kind. You know, I don't know how else to explain it.
I wonder, Margie, do you miss him?
Oh, yeah, every day. It doesn't hurt as much anymore, but yeah. Every day I do.
Yeah. Michael Long?
Yes, and I wanted to follow up on that as well. So, again, I focus on the politics of and economics of the program. And Rogers really put himself out there in terms of gender roles. And so here in 1968, there's this man who's coming into our homes, and he's ironing. And he's in our homes in the middle of the afternoon when most men are at work. And he's showing us that men can be a different way. He also uses Lady Elaine. He uses his puppet Lady Haber, Lady Elaine, to transfer gender roles as well. So she flies to the moon. She flies to Planet Purple long before Sally Ride went to the moon or flew in the space shuttle. Mm-hmm. Lady Elaine became the manager of a TV station. She anchored the news long before we had women anchors. She did all kinds of things that we typically associate with men. And Rogers was constantly telling us that it's okay for boys to cry, and it's also okay for girls to play with boy toys. So he has this really interesting gender dynamic going on, and he does advance that in his program quite a bit.
Thanks to Tim Brumfield in Worthington and also Bob Barnes in Columbus for your pledge of support today. With a membership to 89.7 NPR News, you'll be supporting public radio and supporting All Sides with Ann Fisher. And you'll be supporting WOSU Public Media as a whole. That includes WOSU TV and our wonderful children's television programming. Maybe you grew up watching Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Maybe you remember watching it with your kids or your grandkids. Or maybe you watch the new spinoff series, Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood, with your kids or grandkids right now. Maybe you go online and, you know, Google it on YouTube and find those favorite episodes. If public television and public radio are important parts of your life, then consider a gift today. Give $7 a month as a sustainer and get the Mr. Rogers color-changing sweater mug. It sounds kind of silly, I know, but it sounds awful cool, too. I can't wait to see it. You can have your sustaining membership withdrawn from your checking account or charged to your credit card. Go to WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. That's one mug for $7 a month or a one-time gift of $84. Or for a gift of $12.50 a month, get two mugs. Keep one for yourself and give one to a neighbor. That's $12.50 a month or a one-time gift of $150. Go to WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. Thanks to Eric Kerouac in Columbus for your pledge and also Panna Flower in Delaware for your pledge. Thanks for your support. We appreciate it. We have just about, I think, maybe 19 minutes left in the program. Let's see if we can't get 10 more pledges before the end of the hour. That would be a nice whole number to end on. 10 more pledges in about 19 minutes. I know we can do it. It takes about 2 minutes. 866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. Remember, this is our spring membership drive. We do this a couple times a year. We depend on you. We depend on your support financially and emotionally. It's good to know you're out there. You know we're here every day. It's good to know you're out there supporting us as well. 866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. Margie Whitmer, we were talking about Francois Clemens, the police officer on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, the first African-American police officer on the show. It was complicated by the fact that Fred told Francois, their relationship was complicated, I should say, when Fred wanted Francois to keep the fact that he was gay secret. How did that affect Francois? What was that like?
Well, to be quite honest with you, by the time I was working on the program, I mean, everybody knew he was gay.
Yeah.
But the point is, it didn't really affect his work, and I don't know the whole story about. I know Fred counseled him and helped him through the transitions that he went through. I know that his family life was not good in terms of his mother really condemning him and saying he was a sinner, and mm-hmm. it was not a happy situation. But that's really about all I know. Mm-hmm. He came in, he was living in New York when he was on the show with us, and he would come in and do the show and leave. Mm-hmm. And so I really, you know, I didn't know the backstory very well.
Michael Long, what do we know about that?
Yeah, I can add a bit to that. I talked with Francois directly about this, and so what I'm telling you is what he told me. Mm-hmm. I guess somebody from the show spotted him at a gay bar in downtown Pittsburgh and told Fred Rogers about this, and so Fred decides he's going to call in Francois. He does, and the two meet in his office, and Fred says that if he's going to continue to appear on the program, he really can't go out to gay bars like this. And Francois is really taken aback, and he starts to cry, according to Francois. And then Fred advises him that sometimes gay people sort of put the gayness on the back burner and get married and live out their expressiveness in other ways. And so Francois takes that as advice, and he actually leaves there. By the way, after he's being cradled by Fred Rogers as Francois is crying, he leaves the office, and eventually he gets married. It doesn't last. Mm-hmm. And he goes back and talks to Fred about this, and Fred encourages him at this point to find a stable partner to live in a monogamous relationship. And so the two of them go back and forth, and they sort of grow together on this issue, I believe. And I think Francois really did a lot to help Fred Rogers understand the dynamics of gay sexuality and the importance of loving gays and lesbians. I think Francois, that he played a very key role in Fred's life, according to Francois on this point as well. And Fred, as I understand it, also came to be very welcoming of Francois's gay friends is when they came in the studio. So, and I should add, too, that Fred was a member of a very LGBT-friendly church in downtown in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. So it's a complicated story. It really is. But in the end, I think it's a very helpful and healthy one, too.
And Margie Whitmer, I mean, it's yes. indicative of Fred Rogers' ability to change and evolve.
It is. I think Francois enlightened him, and Fred enlightened Francois. And so that Fred's always wanted to accept everybody, but sometimes you need some education. Sometimes you need to understand the situation to truly, understand them and care for them and accept them. And I think that's one of his, major strong suits, that he was always open to, at least, to listening
yeah.
and absorbing and trying to figure out acceptance.
Michael, you wrote about a young African-American man who came to live with Rogers when he was a child. His name was George Allen. What was the relevance of that?
I don't know the story in detail, but I believe that George's mother had died and his father was unable to take care of him, and that Rogers took George Allen in. And George really played the role of a mentor to young Fred. He taught him about jazz. He taught him how to fly a Piper plane. He escorted him to school back and forth. And really, he became a big brother of sorts to Fred. And Fred often spoke of him very fondly. And I think that relationship informed Fred's acceptance of the civil rights movement and his own desire to advance civil rights as he could on his program. Yeah, it was an important relationship. It's not talked about a whole lot, but there it is. I think it's a little uncomfortable because he was an employee of the mm-hmm. Rogers family, while at the same time he was Fred's friend. Mm-hmm. So that, too, is a complicated story.
Mm-hmm. It's complicated, but it probably wasn't unusual for the times.
Right.
I mean, he was pretty isolated, it sounds like.
Yes. During the times when Fred was growing up, the Lindbergh scare was out there. And so wealthy parents feared that their children were going to be kidnapped. And so Fred's parents, as he tells it, isolated him during this era. And so he was isolated, as he felt, but he considered himself fat and shy and focused on things that other boys weren't so much focused on, like piano. So I think he was really lonely. In fact, I know that he says that he was lonely growing up.
And he had a number of illnesses when he was young,
right.
too, so he spent a long time, a lot of time alone at home. And they didn't adopt his younger sister until he was 11 years old. So he was basically an only child for, a lot of growing up time.
I was wondering about the origins, and I know, Margie Whitmer, you weren't there when he wrote the Won't You Be My Neighbor song, but what do you know about where that came from?
You know what? I don't know.
Michael Long?
I don't know where it came from.
I have no idea where it came from, but if I were to hazard a guess, it would come from the widow who lived near his house, and what a wonderful neighbor she was to him. He often mm-hmm. spoke of her fondly. What was her name, Margie? Do you remember?
No,
she made toast sticks for him?
Yeah, I think it was something Bell something.
Yeah, she made toast sticks for him. And what's really interesting—
Wait, toast sticks?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You take a piece of toast and you cut it and you butter it.
Yeah.
And she used to make the whole thing for Fred, but one time she encouraged him to make it himself. And Fred writes about this, and he says, that's when I really knew that she loved me. She was helping me grow. And I've really latched on to that story because I thought he's always telling us that he likes us just as we are. And that's what we focus on. That's such an important message for so many of us. But he also has this other dimension in the program that maybe Margie can speak of more eloquently than I. And that is, I like you just as the way you are. Now let's grow together. That's the whole point of his program, to communicate that he likes us just as we are, but also to show us where we can grow in ways where we really need to grow.
I think, too, back to where the Won't You Be My Neighbor comes mm-hmm. from, Latrobe is a very small town. And I think just the way he grew up, that neighborliness, that you knew all of your neighbors, mm-hmm. that you cared about your neighbors. You knew if somebody was sick. You knew if there was a new baby in the neighborhood. That kind of thing. That I think that was all part of it, too. Even though they may have been one of the richest families in the town, there was still this sense of community. And when you talk about Let's Grow Together, Fred loved teaching, and he was such a curious person. You know, he was always learning new things. He learned Greek. He could speak it. He could read it. And so he wanted to instill that curiosity and wonder of the world around us in our young viewers, that part of our goal was to help them negotiate the world around them, to connect the dots so that it made sense to them.
Yeah, he was often debunking myths, wasn't he? He was also often unpacking machinery for children. I remember this particular program when he's debunking the myth of witches. And so he has Margaret, what is her name?
Margaret Hamilton. Oh, my gosh.
That's right. From Wizard of Oz.
And he tells children that witches don't really exist. And that program, believe it or not, got quite a few letters from Wiccans who said, hey, you got to stop lying to children. We really do exist. He also got letters from fundamentalists who weren't so happy with him focusing on witches.
At all. Just don't even bring it up.
Right. Don't bring it up, please.
Yeah.
But I think the brilliance of it was that she was there just dressed in her regular clothes, and then she put on the costume. And, you know, then you saw what she looked like, just how she looked in The Wizard of Oz. So that it was really, you know, quite helpful to the kids in the audience and to their parents who you know, had to experience their kids being afraid of witches in stories.
I was so afraid of witches and flying monkeys for years on end. I mean, the flying monkeys was the part I had to get up and walk out of the room. That was that. Everybody out there, if you're listening, if you're enjoying this like I am, I don't want to stop talking to Margie Whitmer and Michael Long about Fred Rogers and Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. But I do want to remind you that it is our spring membership drive. We have about 8 minutes left. I'd still like to get 10 more gifts in the hopper before the end of the show. 866-897-9678 is the number to call. Maybe you listen to All Sides with Dan Fisher every day or every night. You listen to the repeat. Or if you do, then you know that we work hard to bring you a diverse range of topics from news of the day to long-term trends. You're going to hear about it all on this show eventually. And if the issue is important enough, you'll hear about it many times. All Sides spends time with each and every guest. Our interviews are 20, 40, maybe sometimes the entire hour, 20, 40 minutes, maybe sometimes the entire hour. These in-depth discussions are something that only happens on public radio. To support local programming that is truly local, go online to WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. Thanks to Patricia DeMaria in Columbus for your pledge. That means we have 9 to go in just about 7 minutes. 866-897-9678. We work hard every day, the whole team, to bring you interesting content. Every Tuesday, you hear Tech Tuesday, an hour discussion about the latest technology news and new gadgets. On Wednesday, you hear about Wellness Wednesday. That's an hour of programming dedicated to the latest in medical news, tips on diet and exercise. All Sides brings you programs to help you with your finances, to tell you about a new play in Columbus, to introduce you to an interesting author. If these types of discussions are what matter to you, then give us a call. 866-897-9678. Thanks to Arlene Sheik in New Albany for your pledge. That means 8 more to go in just about 6 minutes. 866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. We're spending an hour talking about Fred Rogers, the children's television icon. We've been talking about his life, his influence, his legacy. And the perfect way to support public broadcasting right now is with a Mr. Rogers thank you gift. Make a donation of $7 a month as a sustainer or a one-time gift of $84 and get the Mr. Rogers color-changing sweater mug. Or for a gift of $150, that's $12.50 a month as a sustainer, you can get 2 mugs. Keep one for yourself and give one to a neighbor. Go online to WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. We're looking for 8 more pledges this hour. At any price you can afford. You know, Mr. Rogers would probably be the first to say, don't spend more than you can afford. Be who you are. Be your authentic self. But, you know, what can you afford compared to what you value the show to be for you? 866-897-9678 is the number to call when you figure that out. But do it in the next 6 minutes, and everyone will be a little bit happier. I wanted to return to my guest, Margie Whitmer. She was a producer of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood from 1983 to 2001, and also Michael Long. He is the author of a book about Fred Rogers. It's called Peaceful Neighbor, Discovering the Counterculture, Mr. Rogers. One of the most memorable episodes, and I know this predates you a little bit, Margie, but it featured a child who was quadriplegic since infancy, and they reconnected years later when Jeffrey Erlanger, the child, was an adult. Were you around for that, Margie Whitmer?
I was around for that, but it was Fred had kept in touch with Jeff and his family over the years, and so when they reconnected, it was at the Emmy Awards. Fred was getting the Lifetime Achievement Award. So I knew it was going to happen. And I was there at the event, but Fred didn't know it was going to happen. So he was so completely taken by surprise and just stunned and, you know, so, so happy.
He was before his time and just recognizing the humanity of a person that is often very, very isolated.
Yeah, and you know, he really, that clip is so touching, and when you watch it, you can't help but cry, but it also helps kids to know that Jeff had a really good attitude about all of the things that were wrong with him, and you know, he went on to run for city council when he grew up in the town where he lives. So that it was again, as Michael was saying, more about what's inside is most important, not what's outside. And you know, Fred even took it head on and said, tell me about this wheelchair you have. It's pretty fancy. You know, that he wasn't afraid to state the obvious, to say, wow, look at this wheelchair. How does it work? What happened to you? Why are you the way you are? And Jeff was articulate enough to talk about his surgery and what happened and everything.
Thanks to Rebecca Pickerel and Columbus for your pledge. That means 7 more to go and 3 minutes. We're going to hear Mr. Rogers and Jeffrey Erlanger sing a song together as we exit the show today. Before we do that, though, 7 more pledges to go in just about 3 minutes. 866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. Michael Long, how did conservative viewers take the show and the issues that Fred Rogers broached on it?
Well, some of them wrote to him, and they were upset about his politics, and they said as much. There were also some chauvinistic men who didn't want their children, their sons especially, to watch the program because they found him too soft, too namby-pamby, as Pete Seeger put it at one point, too sentimental, and they didn't think that he was a good masculine role model. So those were some criticisms that he got, and I think he just sort of rolled with the punches and continued to be who he was, confident that he liked himself just as he was.
The Coco the Gorilla Show was amazing. How did that come about, Margie?
You know, I was there. I produced that piece, and I'm not remembering exactly what was happening. I think the people at the Gorilla Foundation came to us.
Okay.
But I'm not quite sure. But it was very interesting because they said to me, okay, bring Coco things that are red. She loves kittens. You know, this may not work. So be prepared to only get 5 minutes because she may not take to him. And so I was not allowed in the environment at all. So I'm sitting up in this office and, you know, I'm nervous for him because it's a gorilla. And 15 minutes goes by, 30 minutes go by, 45 minutes go by, and I'm nervous wreck. I thought, oh, my gosh, what's
best
happening?
Best friends forever.
Yeah. And then he came out and, you know, he had a great time. And if you've seen the piece, you know that Coco pretty much adored him. And he was very calm. And I don't know, I couldn't have done it.
This is listener-supported WOSU-FM and HD1 Columbus and online at WOSU.org. It's a service of WOSU Public Media, 89.7 NPR News. Margie Whitmer, project director at Fred Rogers Company, also producer of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood from 1983 to 2001. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure.
And Michael Long, author of Peaceful Neighbor, Discovering the Counterculture. Mr. Rogers, thanks to you, Michael, as well.
What a wonderful conversation. Thanks, Ann.
And we'll hear Mr. Fred Rogers and Jeffrey Erlanger sing together as we say goodbye. Thanks to Fred Rogers in Dublin for your pledge. We need six more, 866-897-9678, or go online to WOSU.org. And thanks so much for listening.
It's you. It's you.